Welcome to the Frequent Fear Podcast with your hosts, Lee Conway and Lee Malibu.
This episode of Frequent Fear is brought to you by Nightmarish Conjurings. For all your horror and scare attraction needs, go to nightmarishconjurings.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 11 of the Frequent Fear Podcast. I am your host Lee from the unofficial Universal Orlando podcast.
And I'm Lee from Home Haunt UK.
Welcome back everyone. I know it's been a while since we've done an episode, but I think this one is going to make up for it. So Lee, as we do every month, no waffle at the beginning, who have we got?
On this episode we have Mr. Halloween Horror Nights himself, the current Director of Entertainment, Creative Development, Universal Orlando Resort, Mr. Mike Aiello.
And as a massive fan of Universal Orlando, I am geeking out to hell right now. So before I throw up, let's go and talk to Mike.
You're listening to Frequent Fear.
Right, Mike, I just want to start off by saying we really appreciate you taking the time, and I know it is probably your busiest time of the year.
Yes, yeah, we're in full mode right now. In the I guess act three of what would be our three acts of the Halloween Horror Nights production.
This is going to be bittersweet because I'm not making it out this year, and after last year, it's going to kill me.
Oh, no way!
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad we made it out for last year. I mean, we brought the kids out last year, and I have to say, and I'm not just saying this because you're on mic, last year was phenomenal.
Oh, thanks so much. No, we were really, really, really proud of last year's event. And for an anniversary year, we all really felt that it accomplished everything we wanted it to accomplish. And I definitely, our fans definitely responded well to last year. So we are we're going off of that success and producing the 26th year of this event. And we've got a lot of great surprises in store and a lot of great content. And we're really excited about this next year of Halloween Horror Nights.
Awesome. Right. Well, we'll start off as we always do, Mike, because as we explained to you before, and what we do on here is more talking about the man behind the myth, as it were.
I am no myth.
So what we normally, like, obviously, anyone who knows who you are knows your love of horror films, of comics, and that type of thing. But where does that love come from? You know, taking us back to your childhood, where did that love of horror come from?
A lot of it was my upbringing. You know, my dad is a huge horror movie fan, and I was kind of brought up on it. And growing up as we have in the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, which was kind of the beginning of the kind of slasher film genre. With Myers and Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees, it was like this prime. If you had dipped your toe into the horror realm, you couldn't help but be, you know, involved and influenced by those characters in those films. And going year after year to see every sequel of every single one of those franchises, you know, it was, each one was kind of its own little event, in your year to kind of, you know, expect and kind of can't wait to see the next chapter of that story. So, you know, for horror, it was a classic monsters kind of being the beginning steps for me, with Frankenstein and Wolfman and Dracula, and just loving those. I mean, I distinctly remember seeing Frankenstein for the first time. I was in my bedroom and like, I've got just images I remember of looking up, and I had, you know, ships and things and models hung from my ceiling. And I remember the black and white TV kind of reflecting off of all, you know, reflecting light off of all of those models. And having that film kind of illuminate my darkened room and just being completely, you know, enraptured by it. It was a bug and I caught it, man. You know, like every horror fan or any fan of anything, you kind of latch onto it and it just clicks with you. And horror definitely did. And comic books, like my dad also collected comics as a kid. So I was able to read all the Golden Age and Silver Age Marvel and DC comics. So you know, that stuff, you know, really invaded my core. And being a huge, you know, movie fan, you know, I've always loved I think it just goes back to telling stories. It's just,
yeah.
I love really interesting stories, you know, like all of us. It's why we go to theme parks and go see shows and go to movies. We want to be taken away. And that's always something I love about any good story is that it with just words, you know, or in comics, just pictures, it can, if it's really well done and good, it takes you away. And I think that's the biggest thing that I love about, you know, being able to do what I get to do is also realize really cool stories and not only be taken away myself, but allow, you know, people that want to experience it to take that journey, you know, with me and us here at Universal. This gig is a truly a dream come true, you know, and it's a passion and anybody that does anything like this, any sort of creative medium, creativity is a passion, you know. What you guys do, you know, your podcasts and your love of theme parks, that's a passion. We all have something. And for me, it's horror and film and again, stories. They're just amazing. And
yeah.
They are magical. They're absolutely magical.
I think you tend to find that people that really end up with a love of horror tend to start watching horror films at an age that probably isn't appropriate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I was real young when I saw Halloween for the first time, probably younger than I should have been. But, would I be the person I am now if I hadn't seen it that age? Probably not. I'd probably be a different guy if I had been older. You know, it's so funny how things enter your life at the time that they should,
yeah.
Whether they should or not, and it does shape you and mold you. I mean, the Michael Myers, that film is literally a part of me. There isn't a moment in my life where there wasn't a picture of that character on the wall, or a weekend where I wasn't popping that VHS tape in to watch, you know, that franchise. It does shape you and allow you to kind of become. And if you choose to open the door to expand on that and learn from that, great. If you're just a fan and that's what you are of it, that's awesome too, you know?
Yes, I know, because we're the bad parents with our kids that we let them watch stuff that we probably shouldn't do. And our oldest is probably the squeamish out of the two. And because we come over for Halloween Horror Nights, it's like, right, we're going to sit down and watch all the films. And I was so looking forward to sitting and watching American Werewolf with him. Because, Mike, you know that when that house got announced, was it 2 or 3 years ago? I was gutted. And then to see it come back last year, I was like, oh, man, I'm going to get to share it with the kids. And he wouldn't sit and watch it. He got himself all worked up and upset. And we sat and watched it with our youngest. And she was like, is that it? So we eventually sat down and watched it with him, and he was, after watching it, I think he watched it nearly every night for a week afterwards. He became obsessed with it.
That's awesome.
It's a good film, though.
It is.
It's funny. I find myself more strict with my kids than my parents were with me. It's really this weird catch 22 that I've discovered about, you know, my wife and I are parenting, you know, because my son's 10, and also too, he wants nothing to do with horror. It's very funny.
Right.
My son, Caden, he is the furthest away from a horror fan possible. He wants nothing to do with it. My daughter's 7, and I haven't shown her anything, you know, although, you know what? I take that back. We did watch Dracula and Frankenstein together, my daughter and I, and she's 7. So I think she's going to become more of a fan than I think my son is. And maybe when he gets a little older, he'll kind of dip his toe into that pool. But right now, he's like, no way. He will, like, you know, look over my shoulder when I'm going through creative on the event. He likes the kind of the behind the scenes nature.
Yeah.
In my family, I've got my daughter who's going to be a performer, and I have my son who's probably going to be the writer, producer, director. and that's kind of the two. Buckets they kind of fall into. And he's funny. He's like, nope, what are you watching? I'm like, oh, I'm watching American Werewolf. He's like, nope, I'm good. He'll go.
So as you were growing up, Mike, what was the Halloween like at your house?
It was very typical. I mean, I trick-or-treated every year. I remember I was going through some photos a couple weeks ago, actually, and found an old photo of myself dressed as Rambo. And you know, but I've got pictures of myself, in the, you know, the old costumes, the vinyl costumes with the elastic strap mask. I had a Spider-Man costume 1 year, and I had a Dracula one another year. But very straightforward. We trick or treated. It was when I was in high school, when I stopped trick or treating and started being the one getting out the candy. But I would decorate my front porch, you know, completely decked out with cobwebs and boiling cauldrons. And I remember I put my CD player in the window of my kitchen so that I could play a soundtrack while I would cue it. You know, when I saw kids coming up, awesome. I'd be inside and I'd cue the song. It was either the Halloween theme or main title of The Nightmare on Elm Street. I'd play that. And then have this whole event that kind of occurred. I would flicker the lights on and off on the porch. So I'd make the porch real inviting so that they would come up. And then I would spring the trap on them and scare the daylights out of the kids, you know, as I came to the door dressed as Jason or Michael Myers. I like to get the families closer to the house so that I could scare the daylights out of them.
Did you ever create any home haunts then, Mike? Like an actual walk through your house or anything like that? Or was it just the sort of porch stuff?
Just the porch stuff. No, I never built like a home haunt. I went through haunts all the time. My father, he was with the Orlando Police Department for 33 years. He's retired now. He lives in Tennessee. But for 33 years, he was with OPD. And he actually was the head of security we had a haunt here in town for many, many years when I was growing up called Terror on Church Street.
Yes.
It was in downtown Orlando. And my dad did security there. So I would go there all the time because he would be working and get me in for free. And, awesome. and I would go through that thing, you know, I would just repeat all night. You know, I just keep going through seeing, you know, mainly to get scared, but also what I didn't know at the time is I was kind of examining it as well, seeing how everything kind of worked. Again, wasn't really my goal when I went through, but I found myself being drawn to seeing where the lighting was and noticing how the audio affected the rooms and seeing how the characters scared and the different ways they scared. But Terror on Church Street was a huge influence. And bit of trivia, the guy who hired me, Michael Roddy, was actually a performer in that attraction.
I wish I'd known that 3 months ago. We had Michael on and I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he was a performer there. So it's this. That's also the strange thing about this business is how you'll interact with people unknowingly, you know, here in town, and then end up working with people that you may have known or at least come across in your past. It's really weird how things kind of how roads cross, you know, between individuals. But yeah, so he worked there. But I used to go through that attraction all the time. I absolutely loved it.
Awesome.
They had an awesome effect in there, and well, I don't know if they licensed it or not. They probably didn't, but they had a Freddy Krueger room, a boiler room, and they had this awesome effect where the actor was actually on a mechanized slide, standing up, and it would slide him into view as if he was his claw was kind of scraping on a pipe above his head,
cool,
almost like a slide for life. It was the coolest thing, and there were sparks. I think there were. Maybe I've made this more detailed in my head than it actually was. But I just remember being really, really, really enthralled with how it all worked.
Because it's funny, we've talked a lot on the show, like the difference between the UK haunts and the US haunts is, like Lee, you've said before, it seems to be in the US, haunts are generally, it happens around Halloween and that's it. Whereas in the UK, it seems to be stretched out. We'll have seasonal ones. So you'll find Christmas haunts, or you'll have Valentine's ones or Easter or stuff like that, whereas it is literally that couple of months around Halloween in the US.
Yeah, I mean, there have been like full-time even here in town for a couple years, there was a full-time haunt called Skull Kingdom. Yeah. It was off International Drive, and that was open for quite a few years, but eventually closed. It couldn't find its 365 day a year legs, I guess. But also, that was another really fun attraction. You know, when it first opened, that place was amazing. And there's a couple others that pop up every now and then. But you're absolutely right. Halloween is very defined to a very particular few months in the year.
Because there's one down. I know Darren, who I do UUOP with, went down. Is it Shallow Grave?
Yes, I've heard so much about this place, and I have yet to go, and I want to make it out there this year. Shallow Grave, yeah, it gets a lot of great reviews from a lot of the fans that come to our event. They're talking about it a lot. I've yet to go out there, but I'm a fan. I mean, again, anybody that's doing a haunt related activity, man. I'm a fan. I want to go experience it. You know, I'm good friends with the folks over at Busch Gardens. You know, I know all the creative team out there. Scott Swenson was there for a long, long time. He's moved on. He's got his own event he does now during the Halloween months. But the name's escaping me, unfortunately. But yeah, he, you know, it is this kind of awesome little community that the kind of horror creators live in, you know. So it's a fun. I think if you're in horror, you're already in a family, you know, regardless of where you're doing the horror.
Vault of Souls.
Thank you, man. We're
hoping to get Scott on in a couple of months' time because we've heard some real good things about Vault of Souls as well.
Yeah. That kind of live theater immersive environment is that they're doing is really, really great. I just experienced Sleep No More a couple weeks ago in New York, and that was amazing. It's like 8 or 9 floors of content all centered around what you find out as you go through the story. It's a retelling of Macbeth.
Okay.
Right.
It's amazing. I'd never done it before. It's been open for years, but never made it up there to do it. And I just did it recently, and I had a blast. Again, it's storytelling.
Yeah.
And anything that's a good story, you know, regardless of my job, I'm drawn to, you know, and regardless of who's doing it.
I'm going to throw a curveball at you, Mike. One of the first episodes we did this, we had Russ McCamey on from McCamey Manor.
Oh, yes. I've heard of that.
Is that something you would ever go through?
No.
No?
No. No. I don't enjoy the threat of injury.
Yeah.
No,
I agree.
It's not my thing. Now, there are a lot of people that love that type of scare or that type of environment, but you know, if it involves anything with a board and water, I don't want to be a part of it.
That's yours out then, Lee.
Yes, don't think of it coming to visit us.
Yeah, have you guys done that? Did you guys do it?
I produce what the sort of says Europe's most extreme scare attraction.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I went through it the first year.
Yeah.
So tell me about what happened. What was the most extreme thing you did in the attraction?
Just what you described there was that going on. Luckily, that didn't happen to me.
Oh, gosh.
I think the difference that we've got between, obviously, because of that, it's a pro haunt that we run, so we have to run through all health and safety laws as well. So,
absolutely.
So we have to, you know, that a lot of it is, and you'll probably know even with the events that you produce, Michael, is that you can do a lot of things and then just with bells and whistles on, a lot of it can be suggestive.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. Yep.
So, and it's no different to what we do really, but what we do is there's 10 people go into the event and we put them through situations and it's entirely up to them if they do it or not. But the idea is to just try and push themselves as far as the water, and we use eating challenges and stuff like that.
Now, again, I think it's awesome. It's just, it's not my thing in particular, but I know that there's an audience that loves that. And
it's true. I mean, we had people from America coming across just to do the event last year, and we had 4 or 5 countries from Europe people fly out to do. But exactly like you, I would never ever go through it myself.
It was that weird thing as well, though, Lee, wasn't it? That a lot of the people that came through it had never done a scare attraction before.
No, I think it's a different. I would expect that obviously you'll probably find the same, Mike, is that, you know, the amount of people that go to Universal Horror Nights, but then will probably never ever go through a scare attraction outside the vicinity of the theme park.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah. There's a. For a certain percentage of the guests, the Universal Halloween Horror Night event is a comfort zone for them. And if you're not in tune to horror, this is probably your only taste into that world. But also, too, I've met so many people that are not horror fans that have come to the event that have walked away going, you know what? I'm going to go see Halloween. I'm going to get that on Netflix or go buy it. Or I never saw American Werewolf in London. Now I'm going to go see it because the maze was, they really enjoyed the maze. So there's this awesome reciprocal relationship that some of the people have with the event where we are kind of that gateway, which is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you probably find that a lot of people will have gone out and watched The Exorcist this year for the first time.
Absolutely. There are tons of fans. And all the time I see it on the Twitter page where they start building their film festival they're going to hold for themselves. As things get released, you know, they'll go out and seek it out and then either watch it or hold it aside until everything is revealed and do this awesome party where everybody will watch all the brands or the content that we're touching on in the event. I mean, that's so cool.
Yeah, as I say, we did it last year.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
Yeah. Because the kids hadn't seen most of it. And to be honest, I wanted to refresh my memory of a lot of stuff. I hadn't seen Freddy vs. Jason since it came out at the cinema.
Oh, yeah.
So, and that was a long time ago. Yeah, it didn't hold up as well as I remember either. But The Maze was awesome, I will say that.
Yeah, well, we kind of went our own path with The Maze. We kept with the title of Freddy vs. Jason, yeah. But we didn't really want to do the Freddy slug or the worm.
No, I know there was a lot of Nightmare on Elm Street 3 references in there.
Yes, because that is out of the series, but aside from the first movie, the Dream Warriors is like one of my top 10 horror movies of all time.
Yeah,
Dream Warriors is such a fantastic film. I think even as growing up is that I think the scene where they're using the puppet scene with the tendons is still one of the most standout scenes from any horror film I ever remember watching.
I remember the sound. That was what always got me watching it, was the audio that they put on for that scene, because you never see him slice.
No.
It's a shot on him, and you kind of see his arms in the lower half of the screen do the act of the slicing, but you never see it, but you hear it, and that always got to me. Like it was like hands on a chalkboard, like nails on a chalkboard. And we had that little moment featured in The Maze last year, which was, again, just a little homage, a little wink and a nod.
What I loved when you did The Maze last year was having the different endings.
Oh, yeah, whether Freddy would win or Jason. That was so simple, too. It was really just a character change out, you know. But people really reacted well to that. They loved the fact that when they went through, they had a 50-50 shot of seeing the person that they wanted to win. Because,
yeah.
Again, you're either a hardcore Freddy fan, you know, all in, or a hardcore Jason fan. And you know, it was kind of I heard people kind of, when they would exit, they'd either give a big yell of satisfaction if they got the character they wanted, or this kind of like, oh, it's Jason, when they're...
that was actually the first house we went through last year, so obviously the kids were really nervous and it came out absolutely buzzing.
Oh, nice. Like, that's the other thing, too, I love about it, is going to the event and seeing, you know, the mom and dad with their, you know, younger teenage son or daughter experiencing the event. And you can always tell when it's that kid's first time. Because, you know, whenever we're standing in Hollywood or in Avenue of the Stars, seeing guests walk in, you can always see the kids that have never been, like, you know, 12, 13 years old that have never done the event before, because they're literally latched on to their parents. Yeah. But I have seen families that I'll see at the beginning of the night, and like by the middle of the night, that kid's like running ahead of their family, just, you know, trying to get to the next thing as quick as possible.
Well, you said 12 or 13 when Jade, our youngest, was 11 last year.
See, that, you know, again, every kid's different. Every single kid's different in what they, you know, what they want to take on. Again, my son's 10 and won't be caught dead at this event until he told me, I'm 32. I'm 32. I'll go to the event. And I said, well, if when you're 32, hopefully I'm still here. I don't know. We'll see.
There was two things that freaked her out last year. She doesn't like animals. So the American Werewolf House freaked her out.
Yeah.
And the bear in the 25 years house.
Now, if you want to talk about the myth, the bear has become legendary.
Yes.
And folklore, and completely because of the fans.
That was awesome. Go on then, Lee.
So when you decide that you've got an IP that you want to use, say like the Freddy and Jason, so could you just briefly take us through like what happens next? Is do you sort of sit down and sort of watch all the films and then decide what you want to put in and then sort of put down the maze on paper?
Yeah, well, let's see. Well, because we'll be current here, we'll use Halloween 2 as the example.
Awesome.
We just released that yesterday, and man, we're really excited to be bringing that to the event. So using that as the example, we have a awesome relationship with Malik Akkad and Transcost, the production house, having done Halloween 2 years ago, and that was a huge success. And the fact that it did so well for the fans only furthered the thought, even in that year, that we eventually wanted to do it again, but again differently. And I'm a huge fan of Halloween too. I always loved the idea that story, you know, the end of the first Halloween when he drops off the edge of that upper level, that second story building, and falls, and then you just see his imprint. And that alone was a great end. I mean, it's like he's out there, and now you don't know where he is. But then to find out with Halloween 2 that the night isn't over. Like, that's what I love about those two films, is it's still the same night. And that's so rare in any sort of sequel, that it picks up literally where the other film left off. Like, you know, Back to the Future, another great trilogy of films that literally pick up right where they leave off.
Yeah.
Like, I love those types of stories. It's a comic book mentality, you know? It's a chapter, but you don't know it's a chapter until the next film comes out. Then you discover, oh my gosh, Laurie Strode is not out of the woods yet, you know? Mm-hmm. You think Loomis saved her. Okay, he shot Myers. But he's gone, but at least Laurie's safe. But no, come to find out, she's not. And this night of terror is going to continue. And then I love Halloween too, that the fact that it immediately goes back to that POV nature where you're seeing Haddonfield through Michael's eyes as he's, again, just taking this, what should have killed him, this fall, but now he's trying to make his way through in between the homes of the neighborhood. And unfortunately, anyone that comes into his path is ripe for the taking. And then, you know, our maze is going to take on that storyline. I mean, the guests are literally going to be in the final scene of last year's maze. You're going to see Loomis again fire at Myers, and then you're out. Then you're going to walk through the window that he falls through, and then you're in the neighborhood. And then slowly but surely, you find your way to a facade that we're building inside the maze of Haddonfield Memorial. So we've kind of, we typically do facades on the outside of the maze. You know, that's the first thing you'll see. But not so with this maze. We're being a little more subtle with our facade outside our parade building this year, because we wanted to take that facade mentality and put it directly in the center of the maze and allow Haddonfield Memorial to have its moment within the maze. So to answer your question, immediately what we do, you know, when we talk with Malik and you know, he was of course immediately okay with us taking on this film because of how well we did, you know, the first movie. So we dissect the movie, we watch it. You know, if there's a script available online, or if, again, in this case, you know, we receive a script, we'll break it down. We'll break down that script into its scenes. And really kind of examine, you know, the environments that we want to do, what are the kills, which ones do we want to replicate, which ones, which moments for a fan are on that checklist. And that we kind of create that checklist for ourselves as fans to say, okay, if you're going to do Halloween 2, you know, we got to go into the neighborhood. We got to show Haddonfield Memorial. We have to do the sauna, you know, the sauna scene. We got to figure out how we can replicate in some capacity the finale of that movie, which is you know, Michael literally, you know, being engulfed in flame. And we're doing some theatrical tricks to allude to that, you know, near the finale of the maze. So we just break that film down and really kind of give the maze the best of, kind of present a table of contents, so to speak, so that as the guests are walking through, not only, especially for this movie, we're giving them a linear story that they recognize from the film, but also are making sure to pay off everything they expect to see, being fans of that film.
Mm-hmm. I know the Halloween House from a couple of years ago was one of the highest rated, I know, from looking about, that everybody said it was superb.
Yeah, and I honestly believe, and you think about it too, because even in our history in creating mazes, the higher rated mazes, typically for us, we have found, this is just by you know, year after year of surveying and doing an average of what people find interesting, typically the mazes that have a variety of characters and a variety of environments tend to be more popular with our fans than the mazes that are a central character.
Right.
But Halloween broke that mold. I mean, that was Myers the entire time. And in some cases, multiple Myers in a room, you know, like the mirror group did that year. That's all you saw. You saw this guy. But also it speaks to how amazing that character is,
yeah,
and his look. Again, we didn't do that. We're simply replicating what already exists. And the Myers character, his look, his nature is indelible. And that's why I think that maze would already be successful, is because he alone as a character is so frightening. And to be able to have a maze where it is just him attacking you every which way you turn, it's the nature of that character, and we're already building off of an amazing lore that we just have to pay off visually and make sure we present him in the most authentic way possible.
And I'm sure you will, but I won't get to see it. So, just stepping back a little bit, Mike, then, how did you, I mean, anyone who's listened to our other show will know your history with Universal goes way, way, way back. But for people listening to this, how did you fall into Halloween Horror Nights working it?
I was in operations at Jaws. And again, I had gone to the event every year. So I knew I wanted to do something with the event, knowing that I had a job here now. And I didn't care what capacity at that point. I just wanted to somehow be a part of it. So my first gig in Halloween was in operations on the Crypt Keeper's Studio Tour of Terror, which was in the Earthquake extended queue. And I was just one of the people in the mazes that was making sure everybody in there was being safe and enjoying the maze and, you know, moving people along. But I loved it. I loved just being inside the maze. And again, I think subliminally, just like I did with Church Street, I was kind of taking in how it all kind of worked, how those performers scared and what they did and what type of guest makes for a good scare versus what types of guests merely want to look and see the maze. You know, they don't want to be scared. So that psychology, I think I was absorbing, you know, even subliminally. But then the next year was the year I wanted to actually participate as a performer, and that was Hotel Hell. And I was in a pseudo laundry room, jumping out of a washing machine, scaring people.
Yeah, I seem to remember you telling that story before, because they needed the scare actors, didn't you? And you went, I'll do it.
Yeah. I was literally walking out from a Jaws shift, and a supervisor came in saying that they were down X amount of performers that night and they needed people to step in. So I was like, hey, I'll do it. And they threw me into a jumpsuit and said, get in that washing machine. And I had fangs, and I don't know why. they gave me fangs. And I, to this day, I still have no idea why there was this burly vampire jumping out of a washing machine. But, you know, it was a good scare. People were frightened by me. So I guess I did a good job. And that really kind of sold it for me that, you know, every other year I wanted to be somehow involved from a performance standpoint. I did Chainsaw Drill Team. I was I was doing Blues Brothers one year and I broke my foot. So as a place for me to go, even knowing that I had a broken foot, they put me on a bar stool and had me appear from a boo hole inside the Fritanic maze that year. I was in a boo hole for the first half of the run, and then when my foot healed, they made me the captain of the ship. So awesome. I was in the wheelhouse screaming Celine Dion songs, turning the wheel towards utter doom in Fritanic.
That's got to be one of the most frightening things at any Horror Nights maze, then, hasn't it?
It still keeps me up at night. So yeah, performing, that was the thing. And then of course, Bill, you know, as a lot of people know, Bill and Ted was my first foray into the creative realm. And that's due wholly in part to Michael Roddy taking a chance on me, seeing this awful script that I gave him of some jokes and some bits that I had written, and bringing me on. And then the rest is history, man. It was the next year after that, I co-wrote the show with a guy named Kenny Bobble, and and then started meeting everybody here in art and design, meeting TJ Manarino and David Hughes and Kim Grommel, and becoming, you know, now lifelong friends and brothers. And we all just clicked, and they let me in, you know, they let me in. They saw potential I didn't even see at the time. And it's been an amazing journey of learning, of applying what I have absorbed over my, you know, now 38 years of life of wanting to tell stories and wanting to, have people experience things they would never experience, any other way. And it's one of those things that it's an answer to a question I can't even say, because I don't even know how really I got here, other than people taking a chance and being able to apply what I think I know.
I think that's what you find, though, isn't it? A lot of people that are in similar positions to you, mate, will say it's obviously you've got to have some sort of skill, but a lot of it is a case of just being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and then attacking it, you know, going in with reckless abandonment and allowing yourself to try things and not being afraid to fail and putting yourself out there. That's what I've done for the 20 years that I've been working for this company is just going for it and seeing what happens and learning from my mistakes, you know, which I make a lot of all the time, every day. But if you're not making mistakes, you're also not learning.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I've always held true on and have fun. That's the other thing too, is this is a fun gig. Yes, it can be a job like any other job. There are days where you wake up and go, okay, I'd much rather stay in this cozy bed all day. It's not rocket science either. You know, I'm not a police officer like my father for 33 years. You know, I get to create characters that are police officers, you know.
Just bad. So getting into Horror Nights, come on, because we need to talk about it. Mike, which do you prefer, working with IPs or coming up with your own in-house created stuff?
I love them both, because honestly, and I firmly believe this, I don't care what IP it is, it's still an original maze, because it didn't exist that way.
Yeah.
You know, is there a road already kind of laid out for us when it comes to a brand? Absolutely. You know, again, we're watching that film and kind of piecing out how we want the maze to go based on what we're seeing. But it's the same level of skill to apply that film and make it real, make it immersive, make it palatable to not only the hardcore fan, but also someone that may never have seen the film or watched the TV show, that when they walk through, they're still going to get something out of it. And, you know, we're successful at that in some cases. Sometimes we're not, you know, sometimes we didn't nail it. And I'm fully okay with that, you know, because it also, it's an opportunity to learn. There have been several mazes over my tenure that I'm like, I probably would have done that one differently, you know. And anyone that says that that's not the truth is lying to you, you know, that, you know, everything I've done is solid gold.
Yeah.
No, it's not true. It's not true.
You've got to be your own worst critic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also listen to what people are saying about it. You know, again, every first weekend, our team is stationed at all the mazes and all the scare zones and just watching people and seeing how they're reacting. Because, you know, as much as we've been doing this for as long as we have, again, even beyond my tenure with the event, but just the 26 years this has been in existence, there's still experimentation. There's still the element of this maze isn't alive until people are walking through it. And people aren't walking through it until opening night.
Yeah.
So we need to be there to adjust and change and bend based on what our guests are giving us. That's the other beautiful thing about being in entertainment, is we have the ability to affect constant change. This is still theater. We are still reactive to the applause or the silence that our audience is giving to us. And because we're malleable, we can make those effective changes. And hopefully, if something isn't working out the way we had hoped before it opened, you know, very soon we're able to make a change that allows it to work, or at least opens up the door for potential, you know?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I was going to ask Mike was, you know, with it being such a huge event that it is, and you've been through smaller haunts. I mean, a lot of the people we've spoke to on here so far have been involved in or created much, much smaller events where they've only got maybe 50 people going through a night. How does that affect how you set up a maze? Because it's, if you, and I don't want to use the term, but you've got a conga line going through those mazes, which it is, because you've got thousands of people going through. How does that play into how you set those mazes up?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Lee. And again, I won't make any bones about that. Yes, this event is extremely popular, and there are thank God there's a lot of people that want to attend this event and be a part of it and see the things that we're creating. That's an amazing problem or challenge to have. Yeah. But yes, it does affect how we scare. What I love to have, you know, all of our mazes be completely pulsed and allow six people to go into a room and stay in that room for 3 minutes and then move on to the next. Absolutely. Would it allow me to tell even more layered story? Sure. But unfortunately, that's not the world that we live in here at Halloween Horror Nights. But because we've been doing this so long, we've learned to create our mazes, which again are very different than anything you're going to see on the outside. Any of the amazing home haunts or smaller company haunts that exist. Again, our brand is to place you in our stories in the manner that we're able to. And it's a reason why, you know, when you walk through a maze, you'll see multiple areas that a character could come out of from, you know, where, you know, we'll staff these rooms with many different scares so that, okay, let's say you're walking into a room and you saw four people ahead of you get scared by a character. That, great, you saw that. But while you were looking at that, we got a character right next to you that you didn't see that's going to scare you. So we layer our scares in the maze, not only with talent, but with effects, air blasts, even the tactile nature that our mazes take on, whether they're walking through fabrics or the simple, you know, couldn't be more simple technique of the fishing line that kind of brushes the hair on your arms as you're walking through. We try a lot of different ways to affect our guests. And also, we take great care in the focus as well. Our lighting is always focused in a manner that allows our guests to look where we want them to look.
Yeah.
Knowing full well that they have free will. Again, they could turn around and walk the entire maze backwards if they wanted. But, you know, we want to make sure that we're designing our mazes so that the moments and the items and the decor that we want people to see stands out. And that they're walking away having had a full experience, even though, you know, due to the success of the event, it forces us into a very unique operational challenge.
Yeah. I mean, the first time we did Horror Nights was 2004. And then obviously coming back last year, I was slightly nervous that it was going to be... Obviously, it's got a hell of a lot more popular than it was. And I was blown away with how intimate at times those mazes were. I'm a huge fan of the theatrical elements, and you still managed to get them in there. I'm going to say, like, the Purge House last year. So I was nosing along, minding my own business, when a young girl stepped out from the side and said that she'd lost her friends. And did I mind if she stepped in front of me? And I was like, okay, yeah, fair enough, whatever. To only get round the corner and for a scare actor to grab her and slit her throat and pull her out the side. And I was like... Oh my God, that was amazing.
we love those moments. And again, that was really special for you. Did every guest get that moment? No, not every guest. The law of averages, you know, speak the way they speak. But you had that moment.
Yeah.
And you were able to walk away with that memory. And that's awesome. But I'm glad that happened to you.
Yeah, and the fact that you managed to put that element into a maze that is, they are as busy as they are, is... I don't know how you managed it, I'll be honest.
Well, the other beautiful thing about it is you got that moment, but the person directly behind you or three people behind you had an entirely different moment. That is their memory. So every person that is walking through our mazes, that wants to be involved in the story, that wants to be immersed in what we're doing, is going to come away with something different and something just as equally as frightening and just as equally as entertaining.
Yeah.
And I think that is the, if nothing else, that's the one thing we've been able to accomplish with our event, given how incredibly popular it is.
Saying that, I mean, you mentioned Busch Gardens earlier on. A few years ago, they did the Alone Maze, and I know that Knotsbury Farms also tried it. Do you think, like, there is an opportunity for Universal to ever go down that line with, like, an upcharge Alone Maze?
Yeah, I mean, we've investigated those methods for years now, and I'll never say never. But again, we like the mode that we're in right now. Definitely based on last year's event, I really feel 25, we reached finally a good balance with the amount of content, the variety of the content, and with 26, we're really using that as our barometer. We're using 25 as our new bar, so to speak, in how we're creating 26. Again, it's a lot to do with why, you know, we're bringing Chance into the fold. We didn't want to take too many steps away from Jack, but we also didn't want to represent Jack again, because we all felt that would have just been repetitive. So instead, to keep, and I use this really loosely, but to keep the Jack brand alive, why not be able to take Chance, who's a character that the fans know and have actually, you know, they're the ones that have kind of brought her to this level, and expand on her story, or at the very least be able to represent her in a very unique way, that in the same way that we've done with Jack over his years in the event, change him slightly, allow him to grow and shift, but apply his, and in this case, Chance's sensibility to the event. And, that's what we've done, and again, 26 is going to be our hope is just an amazing year, just like 25 was, and we're really excited, you know, with what we've announced already, and what we have yet to announce over the next few months, because we're almost there, man. I mean, I've got a countdown calendar on my desk, and it makes me break into cold sweats every time I look at it, but we're real close, man.
Well, actually, I've just worked out what you've just said there, Mike. There's perfect synergy in this year's event then. So you're doing Halloween 2, which is the sequel to Halloween, which starts off exactly where the first one finishes. Go with me. So Halloween Horror Nights 26 effectively starts off from the end of Halloween Horror Nights 25.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Perfect synergy.
Yes. I mean, yeah, from, again, when we wrote, you know, when I wrote the backstory for Chance, that at some point I guess we'll send out, I guess, hopefully, there's a really great backstory that kind of tells you why she's in the event now. But again, with an icon on the event, we also got to be very careful how we use the icon, because we also know that there's a heavy population that comes to the event that has no idea who Chance is.
Yeah.
So we need to be able to present her basically being able to do two different things for two different types of guests. For our hardcore fans, there's a connective tissue there with her where they know what she was, and now they're going to see what she's kind of become and those new nightmares that she's bringing for herself with the content that she's presenting in the event. That's exclusive to her. But at the same time, to a lot of people, she is a character they've never seen before. So we also need to provide just a look and a vibe, a sense of emotion to the event that the guests that are coming because they're strictly Halloween fans, or they found out Exorcist was in the event, or that The Walking Dead's in the event. I haven't been yet, so I want to see The Walking Dead come to life. I'm going to see that. Oh, and then there's all this other stuff. Cool. Yeah. Oh, and there's this crazy girl that is that's kind of leading it all. Awesome. Mm-hmm. So we toe that line between those two worlds so that we're always giving whatever mindset you're coming into the event with, you're getting payoff.
Totally. This is what I was going to say earlier. Going back on to when you were talking about creating the mazes with the tactile thing, right? I swear that I got touched going through the Insidious house last year, and that last with a black sort of curtain bit right at the end. I was like, I'm pretty sure someone's just grabbed me going through there. And then when we found out what it was later on, I was like, still not convinced. I still feel like someone got hold of my arm. Right, moving on, because I know we're getting on for time, Mike. Something else that's just kind of open, we haven't quite got there yet, that I know you had a hand in, that has a kind of scare element to it, and that's the cue for the new Skull Island Reign of Kong attraction. I'm going to be slightly controversial here. Where did the discussions go about putting a scare attraction element, and I know it's not, but it kind of is, into a mainstream attraction that, for the height requirement, a lot of families will ride?
Here's the thing. I'll be honest with you. I'll take my Universal hat off and put on my. I think that got overblown, honestly.
Okay.
Got real overblown. Where that started was Mike West, amazing man, creative genius, Mike West, who led the creative on that attraction. He came to us simply with the task of, we have this really amazing queue line, and we want to add a level of storytelling to it that immerses our guests even further. And he, you know, this was early on when he showed us some of the drawings for that that attraction and how layered it was. We were like, "Oh, this looks amazing! What do you want us to do?" And he goes, the natives are a big part of the beginning part of that film. We want to be able to present them and at least show the guests that this world has more life than just Kong." So our task was fairly simple in our world. We said, the quickest thing to do is allow the guests to, something that we can kind of gauge and manage, but boo-hole type scares, where we can present this character very quick. Cause also you don't want to see him too long, because then it doesn't become nearly as layered. But yeah, it was pretty much just a very simple task. If we've got this section of the queue, there's not a whole lot going on in this particular hallway, and we've identified this as an area where we'd like to have a performer add that level of storytelling. And we did that, I truly believe, anybody going through, is it a Horror Nights maze? Absolutely not.
It couldn't be
further from that. It is a performer adding a level of storytelling that none of our other queue lines have in this park. From a 365, basis. And we were really excited by it. And also designing that look and that character was a lot of fun. And using all the reference from Peter Jackson's film. And then I know the guys hired to do it are having a blast performing that role. And again, anybody that's gone through it, I think maybe and not have read some of the articles, whether they went through it or not. I really believe it was really overblown. It is just it's a fun moment in the queue, just like any other air blast, like that's featured in the Mummy attraction, the Mummy queue line, or any other interactive engagement. It's a performer, and you shouldn't be there. That's the storyline. We as the guests going through that queue have invaded this land, and we shouldn't be there. So those natives obviously aren't happy that we've encroached on their territory. And so that's the storyline that character has. And that's it. It couldn't be more surface level than that, because it really is. Believe me, that queue does enough on its own that brings you into Skull Island.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, too. The place is called Skull Island. There are skulls everywhere. It's literally in the title.
I know Hunter, my other co-host, went through it the other night, and he knew where the scare was, and he still got scared by him.
And the other thing, too, is I'm glad to hear that. And we've, of course, trained those performers, just like I was talking about before, to pick and choose the people that will react well to that type of storytelling. At no time are we directing our performers to go after anybody that's at a height requirement that is just making that height requirement.
Yeah.
That is not the purpose of that character. That character's purpose is to engage the guests that want that extra level of storytelling, and I am confident that we've gotten and hired performers who are able to do their job, which is gauge the level of intensity based on the guest walking through.
Well, Mike, I'm a huge proponent for live actors in the park, and I say there should be more of it. So continue to do what you are doing, sir, because it is awesome.
I got the Lee seal of approval, so we're gonna do it.
So what does the future hold for Mike Halo?
Man, I wish I knew. That's the other thing about my mindset in this gig is that there couldn't be more change every day or new things coming across all of our desks as far as content for the next 2 to 3 to 5 years. You know, obviously with Horror Nights, that's an over a 365-day creative process. So, you know, very soon we are going to ramp up creative on Halloween Horror Nights 27, which is, for us, right around the corner.
It's crazy.
It's nuts. So I think if I can safely say what's in store for not only myself, but I think Universal, is that we're going to continue to push our boundaries. We're going to continue to create content that we as creators are extremely proud of, but also items and content that we know our guests, if they know about it, are going to want to come to see. But if they don't know about it, are going to make sure they find out. That's the gig, man, is to make this park everything that it set out to be, you know, over 25 years ago when it began. And that is a place where, to coin an old slogan, where you can ride the movies. But I think that's even evolved, where you can live storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we are now. And everything that's happened up to this point has proved that, you know, the level of engagement and layering in all of our Potter content. Again, looking at Skull Island and everything Universal Creative has done with that, just amazing. As far as entertainment goes, you know, my desk is currently covered in content that no one has seen yet. I can only hope to see the light of day. That's what we do, man. That's our job. In anyone in this role, no matter what park, is we just want to give our guests the ultimate memory.
You're teasing me too much, man. Well, I mean, it's testament to not only you, Mike. You know, everyone seems to look at you as the figurehead for Halloween Horror Nights, which you are. But it's not just you; it is a crew of a hell of a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, too many to even count, man. I mean, and all with the same passion. That's the other beautiful thing about having this role, is to be able to watch, interact, and learn from everybody that we work with. The level of artistry and the passion and the talent and the technical know-how is beyond anything I've ever experienced. And I'm constantly, every day, in complete awe of the people that I live with. Because again, this is a second home,
yep.
You know?
Yep.
And for all of us, it is. It's our second home. And we love this place so much and pour ourselves into this place because of what it is, but also because we know everyone that comes here is, you know, coming here for different reasons and found their way here for different reasons and sacrificed a lot to be here with us and see the things that we're creating. And that's one thing that I never take for granted, is watching those guests come into the park every day and knowing there's different stories walking through those turnstiles. And all of them want to be taken away. All of them want to forget about everything else for, you know, however long they're here, to experience something that they would never have experienced without being here, but then carry with them all the days that they're not here, you know?
You're just making me sad now that I'm not there.
Open, man. Anytime you want to come, we're here.
Oh, trust me. I put it this way, right? After coming out for 25 last year, me and Tracy sat down about 3 months ago and went through our finances and tried everything we could to get back out for this year, and it just wasn't happening. And telling the kids that was hard.
Well, you know, the good news is Horror Nights isn't going anywhere, man. Good. Again, this is our 26th year. There's going to be a 27. There's going to be a 30. There's going to be a 40. I'll be, you know, God knows where I'll be at that point, but you know, this event lives beyond anybody that creates it, you know?
Awesome. Well, you guys do a fantastic job. And Mike, I just want to say good luck for this year. I know you guys will knock it out of the park, and I will look forward to hearing all about it, as I'm sure I will, through tears.
Okay. Well, we'll miss you, Lee, but yeah, we're really looking forward to it.
Awesome. All right. Cheers, Mike.
Frequent Fear.
Right, so that's going to wrap up this episode of Frequent Fear. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I was totally geeking out on that one, and I think it probably came across as well. but it was awesome. Mike is such a nice guy, and I say I was so privileged to get to meet him at Halloween Horror Nights last year. So I want to, Mike, if you're listening back to this, thank you so much, because I know that July and August are probably the busiest times you've got going at the moment. And also Alison Lundell over at Universal PR, thanks for setting it up, Alison.
Thank you,
it was really cool of you. But you know, not just Mike, that whole creative team that's behind Halloween Horror Nights, you know, so many moving parts come together to create arguably the best Halloween event in the world.
Definitely,
Lee,
yeah.
You need to get out there for it. I need you to go and see it.
Well, you never know. I mean, you know, if car accidents happen and claims go in, you never know.
Ooh. Seriously, man, you need to go. That would be awesome.
Oh, dear.
Just take me with you. Cool. Right. So again, you know, thanks to Mike and Alison for setting that up. It was awesome. Please, everybody, if you have never been to Halloween Horror Nights and you have the means to go, go this year. You will not be disappointed. It is fantastic. But wrapping up the show, Lee, why don't you let everyone know how to get in touch?
Yeah, you can get us on Facebook at facebook.com/frequentfear. Twitter is just at Frequent Fear. You can email us at info@frequentfear.co.uk. And we've got a website that I will eventually get round to updating. I keep saying that every month. And that's frequentfear.co.uk.
Cool. Yeah, and if you're listening to us on iTunes and you like what we do, please go and leave us a rating and a review and subscribe to the show while you're there. It'll really help. Put the word out that people are enjoying what we're doing, and let other people who are interested in the scare industry know that we are out there as a resource for, you know, we are. That's what we're trying to be, Lee, isn't it? A resource for other people in the scare industry to learn more about the industry.
Oh, definitely. I think it's, we're trying to be that go-to point where we can maybe get the guys that have done this for years and done it on a very high standard, you know, maybe answer them questions that you've always wanted to ask. I mean, the other thing regarding emailing is if you have any questions that, you know, just fire it through to us, and we can always sort of like send it to anybody that you've that you want to answer it, and hopefully we'll try and get an answer for you
as
well.
That would be cool. I know I think it was Courtney Crump emailed asking about Halloween Horror Nights a month or so ago. So I had a bit of a little chat with Courtney about doing Halloween Horror Nights, because she's never done it before and she was a little bit nervous about whether she should do it or not. And Courtney, if you're listening, yes, do it. It's awesome.
Also, don't forget to check us out on Haunted Attraction Network and all the other great podcasts that's on there. And while we're at it, I'd like to sort of say welcome to the family to Scaretrack. They've done on it this month. Yeah, so
welcome
so
aboard, boys.
Yep, and so it's good to have another UK podcast to do the scare attraction on there. And any of our listeners, you know, that's not listened to the guys, it's totally different to our podcast in lots of ways.
If you're interested in like the UK scare industry as a whole, they go into reviews and interviewing people more about the haunts themselves, whereas we're more about the people behind it, aren't we?
Yes, definitely, yeah.
Cool. Right, well, that's going to wrap up episode 11. I do believe our next episode will mark effectively our year anniversary.
Yes, and Lee doesn't know yet, but I think I know who the guest's going to be.
Oh, okay. I'm intrigued now.
I'll talk to you off air.
Awesome. Right, so for Mr. Mike Aiello and for Lee, I have been Lee, and you have been listening to the Frequent Fear podcast.